Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Renewable Fuels Association E15 conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to the Vice President of Technical Services for the Renewable Fuels Association, Ms. Kristy Moore. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you very much for your time. We appreciate the short notice that everyone has gathered on the call, and joining me here today also on short notice is Bob Reynolds, President of Downstream Alternatives. Founded in 1986, Downstream Alternatives has provided consultation services not only to the RFA, but both to the gasoline and ethanol industry for decades. Bob's going to be here to help provide some type, some context, and some historical reference as we look again to yet another report that was released that's leaving questions in the minds of not only us as fuel experts, but also in the media. You know, I'd like to just take a 2 seconds and remind everyone that EPA's decision to grant E15 for 2001 and newer automobiles was based on a multiple-year, multiple-aspect testing of vehicles. You know, we looked at engines, fuels, lubricants, fuel performance, durability, and emissions. You know, I recently called EPA and asked them, how many fuel additive applications do you get a year? And they confirmed they get more than 500 fuel additive applications each and every year that would be identical to an E15 type application. And that has really been kind of a norm since the approval program started in 1974. And it is my contention and can be documented that no fuel additive in history has been studied to the rigorous degree as E15. We're collecting nearly 100 studies at this point that lead EPA to a sound decision to allow the use of E15. But what we're here to talk about today is just a burning question of why are we talking about a specific CRC fuel system report, and what is the significance? And what we'd like to do is provide some context and some historical and technical background for the report, because I do believe that there are gems of information in this report that can be used. Important to know that our participation and peer review of the report was restricted by CRC, and we were not involved in this test program. In fact, it's hard to believe that there's any game-changing information from this new version of the fuel system evaluation. And I'm not sure why we didn't have a press release in December 2011 on the original report, which tested more equipment on a broader range of fuels. But what I think is important to know here is that really there's some groundbreaking work that was published in 2009, especially for fuel systems, that commenced after hundreds or thousands of stranded motorists were sitting along the roadways with empty fuel tanks and dashboard gauges that were reading full. You know, this report from 2009 should have been acknowledged that aggressive test fuels, and more importantly, sulfur, is the leading cause of fatal system failures in fuel systems. And it's like the two reports didn't even intersect. So what happened today was, in a very choreographed manner, the CRC released a report from one of its committees called the Advanced Vehicles, Fuels, and Lubricants. The test program was number 15, and it's almost a tale of Jekyll and Hyde. You know, the initial program looked at an aggressive, you know, which is an acid and water-laced fuel of, you know, E20. They looked at E10 and looked at gasoline with no ethanol on multiple fuel senders, pumps, dampers, and then even constructed complete rigs. And time and again throughout the initial program, no negative effects on the fuel systems were deemed significant, except for one of the acid-laced test fuels, you know, which is expected because, again, it leads back to this sulfur poisoning of fuel systems where we know, you know, this can strand a motorist. The second program looked at, you know, gasoline with no ethanol and an E15, and then again this acid-laced 15, And then on really a significantly reduced number of pumps and senders, not even entire rigs. And then the figures in the report, especially figures 3, 4, and 5, I'm left scratching my head as the performance loss on these fuel systems was greater or equal to the gasoline with no ethanol, or then all of a sudden an E10 test fuel shows up. So it's important to know that we haven't had a chance to look at this except for maybe, you know, the hour and a half after CRC posted the report. But even some of the models identified in the second report, the 15A, they're listed on the NHTSA recall for manufacturers. And it even lists some of the fuel system properly specifically. And so it's puzzling to know what those effects on the NHTSA recall list have to this study. But we're also worried and confused that, you know, there was a study by Minnesota State University back in 2008 that we were very concerned with that used an aggressive E20 test fuel on fuel system components. They also used an E10. The study acknowledged manufacturers like General Motors, Ford, Toyota, and Briggs & Stratton, and the conclusion was E20 was found to have a similar effect as E10 and gasoline on fuel pumps and sending units. So we're left standing going, you know, questioning the aggressive test fuel formulation, which has zero real-world, you know, proof or correlation dating back to even 1993. And I'm here to confirm that fuel properties have significantly changed in 3 decades since the original aggressive test formula. But I'm also left worried that CRC ignored their own report, their 2009 report, number 653, that silver fuel level sensor corrosion programs and the global field programs, you know, that were problems that were acknowledged as really the primary fatal flaw or fatal effect to fuel systems is from sulfur. And so we're concerned that the report itself, that even though the first program is developed, you know, and deemed a scoping study, but it had 3 fuels with 15 system designs, and the second program is 3 fuels, completely different fuels, but with 4, you know, a reduced number set, we're left being very questioning about what does the second report really tell us. Bob Reynolds, any additional comments?
Well, I just think it's important to point out, and again, like you, I haven't had very much time to look at this, and of course, the appendices with all the underlying data have not been released, where we can go actually look at the individual results from each individual test. So there may be more data there, but just a couple of points that I wanted to make, and that is that it's important for everybody to realize, as it says in this report and the report number 662, which was released prior to that, all of these components were selected with the anticipation that they would be sensitive to higher levels of ethanol. And because of that, it's almost like saying, we've got this new chemical, we want to see if it causes lung cancer, but we're only going to give it to people that smoke 3 packs of cigarettes a day. If you select components that you expect to be sensitive, you should expect some of these results they had. But I also wanted to point out that the report does not list the PAT of the ethanol. I want to point out that the results for E15 are more important than the results for E15A, which is the aggressive ethanol, which is indicated in there as being a test fuel developed for a worst-case scenario. But that worst-case scenario was based on a 1990s-type fuel before there were even any specifications. So it's not representative of a worst-case fuel today, and I would defy anybody to go out to a terminal and pull a fuel that has those properties. So to me, that part of the test, the E15A part, probably isn't as important as just the E15 compared to E10 and E0. Finally, I would note that no place in the report does it say whether or not the corrosion inhibitors, which our industry typically adds to our ethanol, was added to the test fluids. So that's another thing that may not be at all representative of what happens in the real world. And then finally, I'm curious that they quantify the portion of the fleet that these parts represent as, I believe it was 29 million. Well, pump in was one of the major component systems to fail, and they say that that represents a substantial portion of that 29 million. Why they chose to use wording instead of exact numbers is kind of curious, because to arrive at the 29 million, they have to know how many of each of those systems, what portion of the fleet they represent, but that number wasn't provided.
Well, we appreciate your time. We understand that some of this highly technical material is difficult to digest, and even in most cases, for even Bob and I, difficult to convey to consumers or to other interested parties. I appreciate your time and your attention to this very important matter.